Morning, you're listening to WMFM Medford 91.5 FM, Tufts Fun Radio. My name is Charlie Driver. This is Pop and Circumstance, your opening show of the day. As far as I know, there's a new schedule, but I don't know how that has necessarily affected things. So we have an exciting day planned, an exciting morning of radio. With Danny, we have something special, right?
Yes, we do. I don't believe my microphone is
no,
on.
No, it is on.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, my headphones are not working. Anyway, yes, we do. We have the exclusive playing of Orson Welles' infamous, if you were born in the 60s or 70s, The Begatting of the President, which charts the rise in biblical verse of Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Exciting stuff. We're going to get to that in a little while. But first, we are going to open with a song that I'm currently queuing up. Sort of from the period. We're talking 1968-ish. This is The Rolling Stones, Street Fighting Man.
Time is right for me.
That was Street Fighting Man by the Rolling Stones. And what do we have coming up, Danny?
Yes, right now. We have The Begetting of the President, read by Orson Welles.
Can you tell us more?
You know, I'll give you a little bit, but I really think that we should just let the album speak for itself. This is going to be a pretty monumental day for WMFO. We're going to play this piece of album, this vinyl in its entirety, all 42 minutes of glory. And that means we should start right about now, Charlie.
All right, we can just sort of roll in with this. You want to talk a little more while I just set the vinyl?
Yeah, I'll give you some previews from the hard copy version as well. Purchased for $1, although it notes that it costs slightly higher west of the Jordan. And it is dedicated to all the money changers in the temple. So, it should be a good time.
All right, we're going to start that right now. This is Beginning of the President. We're going to listen to all of side one, then we'll probably take a short intermission to discuss it while one of us flips over to side two.
Let's go.
Yeah. Danny is actually going to talk more while I try and figure out why that didn't play the first time.
Yes, I'll actually begin with a little reading of the hard copy since Charlie is trying to figure out how to make this work. And it came to pass that FDR begat Truman, and Truman begat Ike, and Ike begat JFK, and JFK begat LBJ. And all this was done that it might be fulfilled.
Light and darkness. And so it came to pass that Congress.
You gotta go back to the start, Charlie.
The evening and the morning was the third day.
Charlie, you gotta go back to the start.
I know.
Okay. And all this was done that it might be fulfilled the prophecy which saith, a little child shall be born in a grocery store in Whittier, and he shall sit upon the throne.
Okay, Danny. We're going to stop there.
You have to smooth transitions.
No, I'm not going to do that. The moment's already passed because someone put the volume down on...
Let's just go with it.
So, all right. This is, take two. This one will actually work. This is The Beginning of the President.
In the beginning, LBJ created the Great Society, and darkness was upon the face of the Republicans. And the spirit of consensus moved across the land. And LBJ said, let us continue. And they continued. And the evening and the morning were the first day. And LBJ said, let us make war on poverty. And lo, there were welfare checks fallen upon the land. And upon them it was writ, fold not, neither shall ye spindle nor mutilate. And LBJ saw that it was good. The evening and the morning were the second day. And LBJ said, let there be a civil rights covenant to unite the children of light and darkness. And so it came to pass the Congress. The evening and the morning were the third day. And LBJ said, let there be Medicare that the sick may be healed and the doctors paid unto the fullest measure thereof. And LBJ saw that it was paid. And the evening and the morning were the fourth day. And LBJ said, let there be bureaus and departments without number, and let them be fruitful and multiply, so that every critter that flieth, creepeth, or voteth shall be blessed with patronage, each in his own precinct. And LBJ saw that it was finger-licking good. And the evening and the morning were the fifth day. And LBJ said, let there be nuclear non-proliferation, and let the capitalist lie down with a commissar that they may exchange corn and culture. And LBJ pulled out his pole and saw that it was good, even unto the 10th cubit. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. And LBJ saw the society he had made, and behold, it was great. And on the seventh day, he gave a barbecue. Still, LBJ rested not from his labors, but said, shucks, let there be an 8th day. the eighth day, he escalated. Now LBJ said, "Let us make a voter in our image, that he may glorify us and elect us forever." And he had it made. Then LBJ said, "It is not meet that man should vote alone." So he caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, while his eyes grew heavy with the late show. And he took one of the ribs from his TV dinner, and from it he fashioned a woman. And he called their names Adam and Eve. And they were both registered Democrats, and they were not ashamed. And he gave unto them a house in a tract which he called Eden Estates. And LBJ said unto Adam and Eve, "Of every fruit of the great society, save one, ye may eat. But of the fruit of dissent, ye shall not eat. For on that day ye shall surely doubt. Wherefore ye may not tune the tube under the forbidden channel of Fulbright, nor seek to understand the accursed code of Morse." Wherefore did they gather them before the tube? For truly that was the light of the world. And Adam rested beside his six-pack, and beheld the eternal cowherds beset by the feathered tribes of Geronimo. But unto Eve this was an abomination and a drag. Now did Adam drift off to the land of Nod, and there entered into Eden Estates an intellectual, who was more subtle than any serpent. And he said unto the woman, "Thou mayest indeed tune unto the forbidden channel and see it like it is, baby." And lo, she beheld a flash of light and great speckled birds from the sky, hurling bolts of flame upon the hamlets of the followers of the bearded prophet Ho. And there was a great battle, and its name was Tet, and it was offensive. Now when Eve beheld this, she was sore afraid and cried out, so that Adam awakened. And he said, "What manner of channel beholdest thou? This scene is forbidden, and for this disobedience LBJ shall surely smite thee." But in her pride Eve answered, "Stupid, thy brain hath been washed. Remove the veil from thine eyes." Wherefore did Adam look, and the scene changed to the chambers of the senators, and it was Fulbright who did speak like unto a dove. "This war profiteth ye not, nor doth it succor our sons. Therefore escalate not, lest ye be escalated." Whereupon did the heavens thunder, and there was a flash of lightning and a mighty blast of the Texas Longhorn. And lo, the Omnipotent One appeared, surrounded by his host of cherubim. And foremost among these was the angel Rusk, who said, "Ye shall honor your commitments before the Sieto of the Mighty all the rest of your days." And unto Adam and Eve spake LBJ, "Who first seduced ye unto this foul revolt?" Whereupon did Eve cry out, "The intellectual. It was he who turned me on." Then did LBJ say unto the intellectual, "Because thou hast done this thing, thou art accursed, and thy head shall be of egg." And unto Adam and Eve he said, "Because ye have been disobedient and hearkened unto the dissenter, a surtax shall be laid upon ye. Inflation shall be visited upon your heads, and your stocks and bonds shall be brought low." Therefore did LBJ banish them east of Eden Estates, and they wandered in desolation until they came to a place called Credibility Gap. Now the sons of Adam were fruitful, and there was affluence in the land. But among the children of the great society there were those whose skins were black, and lo, their portion was niggardly, and of the fatted calf they were left sucking hind teat. And they were the pickers of cotton and shiners of shoes. For in the words of the white psalmist, they had plenty of nothing, and nothing was plenty for them. And it was decreed that they should sit apart from the seats of the mighty, yea, even unto the restrooms. Now it came to pass that a prophet rose up amongst them, and they called him king. And he went unto Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go to the front of the bus." Wherefore king assembled a great host, and he led them unto the lunch counters of the land, and he asked for bread, and they gave him a stone in the head. And he was set upon by fierce dogs, which are the man's best friend. Now the avenging angel Carmichael cried out, "Give me some men who are black-hearted men, for ours is the kingdom and the glory and the black power." And the young men girded up their loins, and there were burnt offerings in the streets, and the summer waxed long and hot, and it was the Molotov cocktail hour, and there was a gnashing of teeth and a smashing of windows, and the people descended upon the merchants, and lo, there was instant credit. And the man was wroth, and he smote them with the back of his lash. Then the king spake, "Render unto Sears the thing that are Sears, for what profiteth a man to gain a color television set and lose his soul, brother?" And the king journeyed to the city of Memphis, where he spake unto the collectors of offal, and he said, "Ye shall overcome." But an assassin rose up against him, and he slew the king. And there were wailings and lamentations in the land. Then a man rose from the south of Eden, and he was called Josh Wallace. He who had stood at the gate of the great temple of Bama and shouted, "If ye are black, get ye back." And he said, "Of the Lord am I now come to rid the earth of these pinks, perverts, and punks, which are a pestilence upon the land." And he went into the fields and into the towns and into the suburbs and gathered together all those who despised miscegenation, integration, and education. "Let us go against these rebellious sons and proud judges of this earth and teach them that he that lieth down before our chariots shall not rise again." And he summoned unto him a mighty warrior, Curtins LeMay. And Wallace said unto him, "Wilt thou make a covenant that together we shall go into Jericho and smite the sinners therein?" And LeMay said, "Yea, verily, let us scourge them with fire, sack their cities, that all the evil works they have done under the sun shall be vaporized in a cloud like unto a mushroom." But Josh stayed his hand and saith, "It is not meet that ye speak thus before the election, for a little bird shall hear thy words and carry them unto the media, and the people will fear us." They gathered together a mighty host, and the people saw them and cried out, "Look, a white tornado hath come to cleanse the land." Then Wallace gathered his police together and blew a mighty blast on his bullhorn and cried, "Elect me, and there will be a great Dixie fry." Now before this came to pass, the Lord God planted a garden east of Whittier at a place called Yorba Linda. And a child, Richard, there grew to manhood, and he was righteous. And he took to wife the damsel Pat, and she was righteous, and they were righteous together. For they knew not wine nor strong drink, and their status was middle-middle, and they offended not. And the number of their cavities were fewer, and they suffered not irregularity, for they were chosen among all men. And one day a deep sleep fell upon Richard, and there appeared an angel of the Lord, which said unto him, "Fear not, O Richard, for yea, though thy beard be black and thy jowls pendulous, thou art comely, and glory shall one day be thine." Whence came it that young Richard was filled with the Holy Spirit of ambition? For he was a low potential high achiever, and he tried harder than he might be number one. And the elders asked, "Who shall be our champion, that we may be saved from the scourge of the new dealers?" And they read a classified ad upon the tablet saying, "Wanted, future pharaoh. Pigmentation must not be unseemly, neither shall he partake of the feast of unleavened bread." For they were not equal opportunity employers. Whence came young Richard, and he saith, "Yea, verily, I shall sweep the liberals before me and sting the Democrats with a swarm of wasps." And they found his words gracious and sent him to the wicked city of Washington. Now it came to pass that Ike ruled over the land, and he summoned young Richard unto him, saying, "Art thou clean as a hound's tooth?" And Richard went before the media and cried, "I am clean, I am innocent, and my wife weareth a Republican cloth coat." Wherefore did Richard sit at Ike's right hand, and it was a time of peace. And the time that Ike ruled over the land was 8 years, And he grew old, wherefore he chose Nixon to reign in his stead, saying, kings are not always wise. Sometimes they're just there. And Nixon journeyed unto the land of the Latins, but they liked him not and spat upon him. And he journeyed to the land of the false prophet Marx, and he went into their kitchens and spat in their borscht. And when he returned, the people muttered, is he not overmuch righteous? And there rose up against him a young prophet, John, of the tribe of Joseph, a man of many talents and a leader of a mighty clan. And he took Nixon by his beard and broadcast him down. And Richard's heart grew sad, and he walked through the valley of the shadow of the losers. Whence did he hie back unto California, where he strove to be chief, but he was beaten. And when the scribes came unto him, he said, yea, I asked for votes, and you gave me the shaft. Woe unto ye, for ye shall not have Nixon to smite around any more. And Richard departed alone, and the liberals laughed and mocked him. And he gat no heat, and he died. And he was 4 years dead.
That was side one. Of The Beginning of the President.
Read by Orson Welles.
That came out in 1970.
Yes, and the print version came out in 1969. Actually, I'm holding the 8th printing of the book in my hands, not the first printing. So who knows what was in the first printing? All right, well, we'll just go right into side two.
Yeah, there may be a little silence as we just get into the grooves on the vinyl.
So start it now. And we can keep talking.
This is side two.
Of The Beginning of the President.
Read by Orson Welles, 1970.
Yes.
...were brought forth abundantly on the bumpers, and the voice of the candidate was heard in the land. Then the Democrats gathered together their armies to battle at New Hampshire, and the regulars stood on a mountain of the right side, and the dissenters stood on the mountain of the left side, and between was the valley of the Generation Gap. Now there came out of Washington the champion of the regulars, LBJ, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And when he spake, the young men trembled, for there was a mighty draft. And he stood and cried out to the armies of the dissenters, wherefore come ye forth to challenge me? Am I not your chieftain? And are ye not servants of the party? Have I not brought you blessings without number? Ye have never had it so good. Then the dissenters spake out, hypocrite, thou criest peace, peace, but there is no peace. The words of thy mouth are as honey, but thy deeds as gall, and thou goest in stiff-necked pride. Wherefore our sons are sacrificed, that thou mayest play Texas Ranger to the world. But still no man in their ranks had heart to go forth and battle the giant LBJ. Then it came to pass that there rose among them a shepherd from the hills of Minnesota, who was called Eugene. And he cried out, who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should mock the young liberals? I shall smite him in the primaries, and deliver you from his hand, and the little children shall eat me. And the scribes mocked him, saying, precinct captains hast thou none, nor talents of silver. Lucky thou art to deliver thine own state. And Eugene took up his sling and drew near to the giant. But the giant disdained him and said, thinkest thou I fear thy sling? Surely thou knowest I am the mightiest slinger of them all. But Eugene feared not. Then it was that he took up the peace vote and slang it, and it smote LBJ between the poles. And the giant fell upon his face to the earth, and the land trembled. And the regulars were sore amazed, and they turned and fled. And the dissenters rose and shouted, Eugene, thou art a mighty candidate. Lead us now into convention and deliver us from evil. And Eugene, in the fullness of victory, accepted their homage. When there suddenly appeared before them Bobby, son of Joseph and brother of John, and he said, lo, I have reassessed. Follow me, that we may go forward. And many among the people reached to touch his raiment and the locks of his hair. And he too was a candidate. Then the fallen giant LBJ raised his head and said, "There is a time for war and a time for peace, a time to run and a time to split. Wherefore did Lady Bird say unto him, 'Offer peace to the sons of Ho, and let us return unto the banks of Pedernales, and we shall deposit therein.'" Now Bobby was a hairy man. He was the son of many shekeled Joseph, and brother of John, who was king of kings. And many sons and daughters were given unto him, for he was fruitful and multiplied past all understanding. Whilst but a youth, he rose up in righteousness and smote the Hophite king of the charioteers. Many sons of Ham and eggheads sought out Bobby to hear his wisdom which God had put into his heart, and he stood up beautiful before all men. Then it came to pass that John was foully slain, and thrones were cast down, and there was a falling off. And Bobby's place at the Lord's right hand was taken by the archangel Hubert, whose mouth was full of tongue, and there were murmurings of discontent amongst the people. Wherefore did LBJ summon Bobby unto him and say, "Art thou he that troubleth my reign, and sacrifice not unto me?" And Bobby answered him, "I have troubled not thy reign, but thou, usurper king, in my brother's house hast gone whoring after the generals. Thou hast impoverished the spirit where once stood Pablo Casals. Thou bringest in Martha Ray." Then did LBJ command, "Get thee hence and show not thy face in my councils, lest I cast thee into a barbecue pit of fire and brimstone, and take thine accursed eggheads with thee." Wherefore did Bobby gather his brethren and go forth into exile. And at his side was Galbraith, apostle of affluence, whose thoughts, like his bulk, towered over all men. And there also went Schlesinger the scribe, and Sorensen the Holy Ghost, and sundry sons of Harvard, thinkers all, and builders of the lofty premise. And Bobby summoned his counselors and said, "Soon there shall come the election. Shall it fall on me? Shall we take arms against this sea of Texans, and by opposing, end them?" But the counselors replied, "Strive not with this mighty man, lest he take thee by the forelock, and he will surely shear thee like a sheep. Let not thy strength be wasted. Keep thy counsel, and observe the opportunity." And Bobby hearkened unto them, for he knew that it was writ, "You can't smite City Hall." But then Bobby's heart was moved, and he ended the fray, and lo, the people enlisted under his banner and cried out, "O Bobby, brother of Jack, lead us out of this wilderness, lest we perish." And he went into the primaries, and the states gave way before his mighty host. And he came unto a place called California, where he strove mightily with his foes. And he was victorious. And then a foul assassin, a son of Ishmael, rose up against him, and he was slain. And strong men wept, and the people were sore afraid, and the houses were in mourning. For those who had seen a great light saw only darkness now. And they sat upon the ground and wept. Now it came to pass that the Republicans saw there was confusion amongst their enemies, and the new election would fall upon them, and they asked, "But who is there to lead us, that we may cast out the Democrats and dwell in the tents of power?" And they searched their hearts. Some amongst them cried out for Romney the Rambler, but the chieftains beheld him and saw that his brain had been washed. And others cried out for Rockefeller, for lo, his name ringeth of bullion. But the chiefs regarded him and found a taint, for he had drunk not from the cup of gold water. And there was Ronald, he of the late, late show, and the South clave unto him. But the delegates cast him forth, for he was not the hero, but the hero's best friend. Wherefore they cried out, "Could we but raise Richard from the dead, we should have a mighty champion and slayer of Democrats." And the Republicans said unto themselves, "We are the resurrection and the life and the law and the order. He that believeth in us, though he were dead, yet he shall live." But the supporters of Rocky cried out, "He hath lain 4 years in his grave, wherefore he stinketh." And the Republicans said, "Yet shall we raise him, and he shall be perfumed o'er and anointed with moderation, that he may become a new Nixon." And they said unto him, "Richard, rise and come forth." And lo, he came forth bound hand and foot with winding sheets, and they took them from him and brought him a new image. And they said, the first Nixon was of the earth, the last is of the spirit, and the spirit of God lighted upon him like a dove. And he said, I came back, for he that loseth the election shall win it, and the last shall be first. But is it not meet that I should have a running mate? And they brought him Agnew, and together they journeyed forth across the land, like unto living men. There was a man in the land of Us, whose name was Hubert, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared LBJ and eschewed dissent. In the days of his youth he had known liberalism, and when the liberals came not unto the house of LBJ and cursed him in their hearts, Hubert sinned not, nor charged LBJ foolishly. Thus said Hubert continually, naked came I out of the Senate, naked shall I return, ere I defy my Maker. For LBJ giveth, and LBJ taketh away. Blessed be the name of Texas. And the Democrats went unto Chicago that they might rejoice and take unto themselves a new king. And they came every one from his own place. And in this congregation were Jesse and his cohorts from the deserts of the West, followers unto the slain Bobby, whose hearts were sore afflicted. And there was Julian of Bond, and Lester, wielder of the mighty axe handle, and Connolly, boss unto the ranch hands. And foremost among them was Daly, Lord of Hosts and Maker of Kings. And LBJ said unto his captains, have you considered my servant Hubert a perfect and upright man, one who feareth me and walketh in my ways? Yea, though he talketh with the tongue of the liberals, he shall not forsake me, for his supporters are few and full of labor. And when the people heard that the election should fall upon Hubert, they were dismayed and rushed into the streets, shouting, should not the multitude of lies be answered? Should a man full of talk be justified? And the Hippites and the Yippites and the followers of Eugene came forth and jeered. Wherefore did Daly summon unto him his hosts and say unto them, let us welcome these children unto Chicago. Let us lay out a carpet of red. Let us silence this bleating of the sheep. Smite them, and deliver them unto my hand. And they smote the children. There stood a watchman on the tower, and his name was Walter the Cronkite. He cried out against the slaughter of the innocents. Wherefore did Hubert win the nomination? But it was dust and ashes in his mouth. And his words were a sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal. And he was covered with boils. And the followers of Eugene cried unto him, thou hast lost thine integrity. Go worship LBJ and be damned. And damned if he wasn't. Now Nixon came unto the people and lifted his arms high and showed them the palms of his hands, that they might see the marks of his crucifixion and marvel at his resurrection. And the people were sore amazed, and he cried out to them, behold the man, Nixon's the one. I am the re-election and the right. And they regarded him but as a fisher of votes and believed him not. His enemies hissed and cried, deliver us from Tricky Dick, and asked, wouldst buy a used chariot from this man? But Richard said unto them, verily, when I was young, I girded up my loins and smeared with a mighty hand, and mine enemies cried out against me and said, beware, beware. Then I knew that I had sinned, and I suffered wretchedness and desolation of the spirit, and from the electoral college I dropped out. But lo, I am born again. Wherefore loveth me, feed my sheep, and get ye unto the precincts, and baptize the unbelievers in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And it came to pass that the voters blessed him. And the new Pharaoh was received up into heaven and sat on the right hand of Gop. For the Republicans were in the temple praising and blessing Richard. Now for the first 100 days, Richard wandered in the wilderness of Washington from the deserts of dissent to the mountains of moratorium, seeking the signs of the times. But there came unto Richard the Pharisees and certain of the scribes and the young men who studied not for war, for they had read the gospel according to John the Leftist. And they grew hair and wore coats of many colors, so that Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. And the Pharisees asked, "What of the inflation?" And Richard replied, "Glad am I that thou hast asked that question." And the scribes asked, "What of integration?" And Richard replied, "I would make myself perfectly clear on that point." And the young men cried, "When shall we have peace?" And Richard replied, "Let me say this, and let us make no mistake about it." Whereupon did Richard summon his silent majority, and he saith unto them, "Gird up thy loins, for the day of judgment is soon at hand. Battle with all thy strength, lest the Democrats return again." And the suburbs cheered him, and there was great reaction, yea, even unto Orange County. Wherefore, verily, I say unto you, my brethren, let us pray.
You've been listening to The Beginning of the President by Orson Welles. That concludes that playthrough of it.
Yes, indeed. And I was happily surprised. I had not actually listened to the second side of the album in, I think, ever. So I was happily surprised with the results.
Wow. An exciting trip through the history in a novel way.
How many of the references did you understand, Charlie?
Mostly the political ones, not the cultural ones, but the political ones. It's a fairly well-trodden part of American history, especially with the 1968 nominating convention, so...
Who would you say was your favorite character?
Barack Obama.
Did you listen to the vinyl?
Yes.
All right, on that note, I think we should move into some PSAs.
One PSA.
Some PSAs. Why not cover your computer camera? If you have a computer with a webcam and you don't use it, why not cover the camera up with a piece of opaque tape? In addition to government programs, there's plenty of other malware and viruses that can hijack the computer's camera to spy on you. So if you don't use it, consider covering it up. This is a message in the public interest from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. And that was the theme of today, education, with the beginning of the president, which we've now concluded.
Yeah, we're going to move into some sort of thematic music now, I think.
All right.
You excited for that?
Adequately.
This one is from the musical Hair. Thank you. That was Aquarius, the opening track from the musical Hair. And we're sticking with music themed from the era now, except this one, Danny, coming up has a more contemporary bend, and is also a rare foray for the show Pop and Circumstance, named after Pop, to go into the opera a little. So what do you know about John Adams?
All I know is that the CVS webpage is opening up in Spanish right now, and I can't figure out why.
Can you change it to German? That might be more helpful.
Yeah, I'll try. I'll let you know how it goes.
All right. In the meantime, this is Act 1, Scene 1 from John Adams' 1996 musical, Nixon in China.
Watch us now. networks, colors glow livid through drapes onto the lawn. Dishes are washed and homework done. The dog and grandma fall asleep. A car rolls past, playing loud pop. Is gone. As I look down the road, I know America is good at heart. An old cold warrior piloting towards an unknown shore through shoals. The rats begin to chew the sheets. The rats begin to chew the sheets. Begin to chew the sheets. The rats begin to chew the sheets. The rats. The rats. The rats begin to chew the sheets. There's murmuring down below. There's murmuring. There's murmuring. Murmuring. Now there's ingratitude. My hand is steady as a rock. Reaches my ears. Nobody is a friend of ours. The nation's heartland skips a beat as our hands shield the spinning globe from the flamethrowers of the mob. We must press on. We know we want.
That was Act 1, Scene 1. News Has a Kind of Mystery from John Adams' opera, Nixon in China. John Adams, notable American contemporary composer, also wrote The Death of Klinghoffer, which is in some extremely Jewish circles the most anti-Semitic musical. In most circles, not an anti-Semitic musical.
What do you mean by that?
It's about the Achille Lauro disaster, or the Achille Lauro hijacking. When a cruise ship was hijacked by Palestinian terrorists in the late 1970s, or I think it was middle 1980s, and there was only one person killed, and it was a disabled Jew named Klinghoffer, who was shot in his wheelchair and pushed off the side of a boat. But the opera shows the point of view of the terrorists and why they were driven to terror, and that's why it's anti-Semitic, apparently. But then I went to see it, and it wasn't anti-Semitic, it was just pretty good. Except the first act, the captain of the Achille Lauro has an aria that's no joke 30 minutes long, and everyone fell asleep.
Lovely.
Yeah, fun times. All right, that's about it for us. You're listening to WMFM Pop and Circumstance on WMFM Medford 91.5 Tufts Freeform Radio. We're going to go out with a song from the band Lamb Chop off of their album. Guess what the album's called, Danny?
Lamb Chop?
No. Think about the theme of today.
Chopped lamb?
Nixon.
Oh, yes. Although this is arguably more about LBJ than Nixon.
Well, you know, I could find some LBJ music.
But maybe next week.
Yeah, maybe next week. Instead, we're going to listen to the song The Book I Haven't Read, and that'll take us out today. So, we'll see you next week.
Thanks
for
listening.
This has been Pop and Circumstance. Danny, Charlie, Nixon.
Toast so long.
crowd tonight. Here comes your girl. The showers fall tonight. It's a rainy world. Shivers on my spine. Could be what we had in mind. Remember all the time we said we could be, always should be. Porch tonight. Here comes your girl. Beneath the dull porch light, your thoughts will